Chapter 4 Regeneration All Things New. We have seen that sin is the ultimate and only problem of humanity, and that man's problem with sin has two aspects, one internal and the other external. Not only does every fallen son of Adam have a bad heart, he also has a bad record in the eyes of God's law. Sin both defiles him and condemns him. Its power rules within him, and its penalty rests upon him. Man is both helpless and hopeless. His plight is truly impossible. Into this situation of darkness and despair, a great light has shone. Jesus has come. He can and will save his people from both the penalty and the power of their sins. He does the former in justification. He does the latter in regeneration. In the second and third chapters, we have considered the great Bible doctrine of justification. We will now take up the subject of regeneration. Justification takes place in heaven, in the courtroom of God. Regeneration, on the other hand, takes place on earth, in the heart of man. Justification is a declaration by a judge. Regeneration is an act of creation by an omnipotent creator. A parable from the university. At every college and university, students study hard to get an A at the end of the course. When I was a student, I did the same thing. But I had one class that was different. It was a senior-level course taken only by physics and chemistry majors, and there were only 4 or 5 students in the class. The first day of lectures, our teacher surprised us with the following announcement. You don't have to worry about your grade in this course. You all have an A. Now we can just settle down and enjoy the material. Now, this is exactly what God does in justification. God gives us an A at the beginning of the Christian life. We do not labor to merit eternal life at the end of our course. We have eternal life. We exult right now that in just a few more heartbeats, we'll be in heaven. Lost religious men have 2 basic responses to this doctrine. On the one hand, the legalist hates it. This self-righteous Pharisee only does good works because he is trying to get an A at the end of his life. If he could, he would like to live in sin, and he resents the fact that he does not get to. His objection is, if God gives men eternal life at the beginning of the Christian life, what will keep them from continuing in sin? If he gives men an A at the beginning of the course, no one will study the material. On the other hand, the lawless religious man likes the doctrine of justification by faith. Well, I've already got my A. Now I can throw my book in the trash, ignore the teacher, and go do my own thing. Such men turn the grace of God into licentiousness. They view free grace as a license to sin. In this day of easy believism, churches across the nation are filled with just such unconverted people, lost men who like to think of themselves as carnal Christians. What is wrong with the reasoning of both the legalist and the libertine? Does God give us an A at the beginning of our course just to make it possible for us to skip class and still get a top grade? Does he pay for the criminal's crimes legally in justification just so that the criminal can continue to murder, rape, and pillage, only now with immunity from punishment? Absolutely not. What does God do? At the very same time that he gives us an A at the beginning of our course, he also changes us on the inside so that we will love to study the material. In other words, when God justifies a man, he also regenerates him. Regeneration is inseparable from justification. A justification never occurs without it. And this is Paul's answer, both to the Jewish legalists who claim that his teaching would lead men to continue in sin, and to the libertines who wanted to use his teaching as an opportunity for licentiousness. What shall we say then? Are we to continue in sin that grace might increase? May it never be. How shall we, who died to sin, still live in it? According to Paul, every Christian has undergone a radical transformation that makes it impossible for him to continue in sin. This transformation takes place in regeneration. True grace always instructs us to deny ungodliness and worldly desires and to live sensibly, righteously, and godly in the present age. The invariable mark of any man who has found genuine peace with God is that he immediately begins a lifelong quest to know and follow the God he now loves. The man with false peace, on the other hand, turns back to his own selfish interests as soon as he feels safe from the danger of hell. The true Christian will never use grace as a license to sin. He already sins more than he wants to. Christians do good works, then, not because they are seeking to merit an A from God, but because they have been given new hearts that love to study the material. This provokes some searching questions. Do I read the Bible and pray because I have to? Do I feel cheated that I cannot pursue sin like the rest of the world? Is there anything in me that just loves God for who He is and loves goodness for what it is? Is there any delight in the things of God? The answers to such questions will tell us much about the state of our souls. Biblical representations of regeneration. The Bible has a great deal to say about regeneration. In the following pages, we will examine 9 biblical representations of this great miracle. Each views the same glorious reality from a different angle, while illuminating different facets of it. As we consider the various scriptural depictions of regeneration, it is important for us to bear in mind that the invisible realm they describe is just as much a reality as the visible and temporal world that we see with our physical eyes. In fact, the invisible world may be said to be even more real than the visible world, since the things of the spiritual realm are permanent and eternal.